Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 287. Recorded Wednesday, February 11th, 2015. I hate them green bubbles. This Week in Google is brought to you by LDProducts.com, the ink and toner experts. Shop online at LDProducts.com for high-quality products at discount prices. For 10% off ink and toner cartridges, plus free shipping, excluding OEM, go to LDProducts.com/twit and enter the offer code TWIT. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price. Because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/twig and entering the promo code TWIG. And by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com. Get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code TWIG when you check out. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we talk about Google, the cloud, Facebook, and Twitter. Jeff Jarvis is here, professor of journalism, City University of New York, CUNY, plus Jeff Jarvis on the plus, buzzmachine.com on the blog.
But you know, the good news, the really good news
well,
is coming up.
Yeah, it was kind of a bad news, good news day. Daily Show, we're losing, what's his name, John?
But that guy.
Yeah, that guy. I've forgotten his name already. Do you remember the name of the guy who preceded him on The Daily Show?
Kilbourne.
Craig Kilbourne.
Yep.
Right. But we are, what we lost on The Daily Show, we gain for one brief shining moment. Gina Trapani is here.
Yeah. Hello.
How's things going? Back.
Things are good. Things are good. I miss you guys.
We miss you.
Really, we miss you terribly. Today. How are things at ThinkUp?
Good, good. Things are good. We got some press this week. Fast Company included us in their top 10 most innovative companies in social media. So that was nice. Yeah. Yeah. And just been hacking and through the night, shipping a lot of code. And things are going well. But I do miss you guys a lot. And in fact, I've been far away from Google News. It's been fun going through the rundown. A lot going on, it seems like.
Yeah, there always is. Why do you still have to write code? Isn't ThinkUp done?
You know, our current issue is that Amazon Payments decided to sunset the payments product that we used.
And that
Kickstarter used. So at some point, I think it's June 1st, we stop being able to collect payments from our subscribers, which, you know, affects our business slightly.
Yeah.
But, you know, Kickstarter moved over to Stripe, and we've been evaluating different options, and we're moving to Amazon's new product, which they pitched us on. So I've been sort of deep in the thick of, you know, writing billing code, which is the worst kind of code to write. You know, like I so much more enjoy product development, you know.
Thanks, Amazon.
Thanks, Amazon. Well, you know, it's one of those risks, and we've talked about this on the show before, about, you know, kind of depending on a particular API or a particular product that's not your own, right? But it was interesting to me that Kickstarter moved over to Stripe, because even Kickstarter doesn't want to store credit cards.
Right.
You know, even a company as big as Kickstarter, right, you know, they've been hacked in the past. They do not want to be responsible for storing credit cards. So, so that's kind of interesting.
Yep. And some good insights. Look at this one. 8 days without a picture. I haven't posted a photo on my Twitter. Actually, this is Facebook. On my Facebook stream in 8 days. So it would be a good idea to find something to share. I had one more tweet this week than last week. 13 tweets. I'm pretty consistent anyway. You can see what your most popular tweet was. You know, what's really fun is going back 4 years. My most popular tweet was when I was in Argentina about to go to Antarctica. You know, what's really sad is that I've unfortunately posted some of my images on PicPlease, which has since gone out of business.
Yeah.
So this is a picture of us, of Wozniak and others finding out we don't get to go to Antarctica. It was a great picture. Gone forever.
That's a bummer.
So that's really frustrating but that, I guess, is the way of the web. We just kind of assume that everything, you know, where we're storing our pictures is going to go on forever. Fortunately, now I store all of my images on Google Plus. I figure Google will be around, but also on Microsoft's OneDrive and Dropbox. I figure of the three, somebody's going to stick.
It's going to stick around. It's going to stick somewhere.
One of them.
Yeah.
One of them. 33% of my tweets said I, me, mine. That's good. That's an improvement. It's only a third. Yeah.
Man, I came in somewhere close to 70 this last time. I was like, "Oh, that's harsh. I need to back away from myself."
Biggest time for tweeting, biggest response, 3 and 4 p.m. That makes sense. That's good. So late afternoon tweets are good for me. Oh, crap.
I like what's the matter?
I said the word great more than any other word on Twitter this week. Last week. Help.
Help. Very positive. I like that,
yeah.
Leo.
Somebody once told me, I think it was a 12-step program, that there are only two prayers. Help me, help me, help me. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Great, it's close. Well, thank you, everybody, for coming back and doing it. Guess what? This is the 10th anniversary of Google Maps. It was February 8th, 2004, the launch of Google Maps. And it's fun to look, but this is what it looked like when it launched. In the original early days of the web, looked so crappy. We didn't know, though, did we?
No.
So crazy. That just doesn't feel like it was that long ago.
Look at the underlined links.
Look at those blue links.
And then they turn to purple when you click on them, right?
And that's like browser default now, right? That's like zero CSS, zero styling.
This is what it would look like if they had no styling. Right. Wow.
You know, Google Maps, it's so funny. At the time when they launched it, it was very much like Google Search, where I was just kind of like, MapQuest, it works.
Right.
Like, what do we need another mapping tool for?
Right.
What do we need another search tool for? What do we need another web-based email product for? Right? But it was one of those things that Google just knocked out of the park. And, you know, fun fact, Google Maps was started by the brother team, Rasmussen, right, who went on to do Wave.
And then went on to Facebook, right?
Yeah, and then
isn't Lars like CTO or something?
He is. He's got an important title at Facebook now. Yeah. But wow, man, Google Maps. And Google Maps was one of the first applications to usher in sort of the super dynamic JavaScript based web apps. Right, and that was before Gmail.
Mm-hmm. There he is, Lars Rasmussen.
I think so.
Yeah,
he's at Facebook now. I don't know what his title is. 10 years ago. Boy, that's a fast 10 years. By the way, interestingly enough, our 10th anniversary for This Week in Tech is in April.
Wow.
I want to get, and anybody has, if you're a designer and you watch the shows and you'd like to help us out, go to our website, twit.tv, look at the logo. I'd love to modify that in some way so it says, 10 years or something. Yeah, like that. In fact, if you want, just email leo@leoville.com and I'll send you the Adobe Illustrator versions of that, and you can play with it. Because I'd love to, I don't know, a round aside, just, I was thinking one of those curly banners with little birds carrying it.
I think, or maybe just a party hat on top
party
of the bug.
Hat. 10 years of Twitter.
Jason's already planning our
10th anniversary Twitter, which will be in April this year.
Wow.
Yeah, that's cool. Incredible, Leo. That's incredible longevity.
For a podcast network, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think for any kind of web-based company, but for any kind of startup, a web-based company, I think it's huge. You know, I remember when Gawker turned 10, I was talking to Nick about it, and he was like, God, I feel just old. You see these little companies getting snapped up within a year, and I just feel like, we're this old company kind of plodding along, even though Gawker is not that at all. But I actually really respect and aspire to be one of the companies that sticks around for 10 years. Gosh, I hope ThinkUp makes it to 10 years. That would be amazing.
How old is ThinkUp now?
We've had a couple of different forms. And if you go from the day we established the LLC, that was like July of 2013, I want to say.
Okay.
So, it'll be 2 years in July.
But you wrote ThinkUp yourself first, right?
Yeah. It was called Twitalytic. It was like project. I bought the O'Reilly Hacking the Twitter API book. And spent like a weekend. And literally it still has it had bits of sample code from that book. For like years in it.
Wow.
It underwent a few different forms. It was named a couple different things. It was called Think Tank at one point. It was a nonprofit. It was funded by, we had a MacArthur grant. But we founded the LLC in July of 2013. So I've got another 8 years to go before I reach your milestone, Leo. It's a lot to be proud of.
I'm very proud of it. And the team we have.
And I'm trying to think if anybody's been with me. Well, Frederic has since almost the beginning, and Tony Wang has since almost the beginning. So there are a few people who are still here. It's fun to watch. Look at the Christmas card and watch it grow.
Oh, I love the Christmas card. The Christmas card's great. Yeah.
So what did you think, Gina? Actually, this is timely, of the announcement that Google was going to start once again re-indexing tweets. They got the fire hose.
They got the fire hose. I actually hadn't heard that. Man, it's I need to come back on the show.
Oh, you've been missing back on the show.
You're missing all the big stories. So I'm actually of mixed opinion, and I'm sure Jeff is as well, because we both would like some of the tweets about us to be buried forever. But
really?
I don't know what the deal was. I don't think we still know what the deal was between Twitter and Google. They used to have the fire hose. Remember, they used to search tweets. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden they stopped.
Google Plus started around then.
Right.
Yeah. But now apparently there's been a deal sometime in the first half of the year. After more than 2 years not doing this, Google's going to start once again putting tweets into search results. Bloomberg reports that Twitter gave them access to the fire hose. We don't know what the deal was.
The presumption is that Google paid for the fire hose. The Twitter, what I see generally is that Twitter got, I know, don't you hate that? Twitter got more.
I got a mayonnaise commercial because the stupid webpage I was looking at, Start Auto runs a mayonnaise commercial. Stop it. It's killing the page too. All right.
So you, what's your objection? You feel like you want tweets to go away?
Yes.
I mean, the Library of Congress gets the Twitter archive, right? I mean, at some point.
That's fine. Twitter... I don't care about that. Here's my objection.
Nobody looks at it. Yeah.
Here's my objection, that somebody will search my name and not only finding all the good stuff that I do in my blog and stories about me and Wikipedia, they'll find tweets about me.
Yeah, I hear you.
And
I hear you.
I don't want some of those to surface because I get a lot of nasty tweets.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. But you have some nasty websites too, right? I mean,
well, that's not a big deal because nobody links to those. So those don't show up in search.
I see.
How is Google going to rank these tweets? Because it's not going to be using PageRank.
Well, I think it's more of a sample. I saw some come in and it was more sample. It was a sample. It was a couple of tweets in a search result.
But how do they choose them?
It seems like they should rank them. If they have access to the fire hose and they're getting the API results, they're getting number of retweets, number of favorites, number of followers by the author who posted them, whether or not the author is following, you know, the person. So I presumably Google's going to use those signals to rank those tweets. I mean, if a tweet gets, you know, a couple hundred favorites, I imagine that should rank
higher.
That
would be fine with me. I got no problem about that.
Yeah.
If they, but do we know? How do we know?
But this isn't any different than Twitter's search itself, right? It just exposes.
Yeah, but I don't care about that, because I think if you're going to Twitter and searching for tweets about me, that's fine. But what it's a little different if you go to Google and you search for my name. Mm-hmm. I feel like that the stuff that's on Twitter is so ephemeral anyway. This is giving it more weight perhaps than it deserves.
Yeah, it's sort of the eternal debate about whether or not to log like IRC conversations, for example. You know, people go into a chat room, right. And I think a lot of people use Twitter like a chat. It's this idea that these are just these ephemeral short messages that you type off the cuff.
IRC content.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny to think of community had this big debate. Like, do we log the IRC channel? You know, some people really didn't like the idea that it was logged. Look, I'm just dropping in for some quick help. I don't want this to be on the web forever. But others argued like, hey, there might be conversations that happened here that might be helpful to someone else in the future. And it's all about, I mean, what we're talking about here is just the expectations, right? Leo, like, you don't expect that tweets are going to show up in Google because they don't. And they're so fast and, you know, they happen so quickly and they're more like chat. But that's changing now. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, if they're in the Library of Congress, I mean, then their tweets are tweets. They're out there. They're permanent whether or not we want them to be.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like, you know.
So here's my question. So the debate we have a lot of time, I say that Google can't own content, can't pay for content. So if you're a German publisher, do you look at this deal and say, oh, you paid for tweets. Why don't you pay for us? Or is this different? Mm-hmm.
That's a good question.
That's a really good question.
Because it's definitely in Twitter's interest. They not only would they get the revenue, but in a way, this I mean, that's what this Bloomberg post says. It draws more people to Twitter, right? And it helps grow Twitter.
Right. So in a sense, it should be without revenue. But Twitter does charge. It charges for its fire hose. It allows Google to buy it. But I see some oil on that slope.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny because Twitter's former chief operating officer, Ali Rouhani, according to Bloomberg, was against renewing the Google agreement. He wanted to keep more control over Twitter's content.
Hmm.
Anyway, this is an interesting story. By the way, notice the new Bloomberg business.
It's nice.
Yeah, look at this. As I scroll, look at the top. There's a little.
You're almost done. You're almost done.
There's a little line showing how far I am into the article. Is that weird?
I like that.
I just noticed that.
Yeah.
That is bizarre.
It's too similar to the progress bar of whether or not a page is loaded. Yeah. So I was like, oh, is this page not loaded?
I wouldn't do that. And besides, what is the mess? What is it say? Is this information I want? Like how far down? I've got a scroll bar. It tells me where I am on the page.
It seems like it's this horizontal scroll bar.
But it's different from the scroll bar.
Well, the scroll bar might include comments and other stuff.
It does. The scroll bar includes ads. And this does not. Well, maybe it does. I don't know.
Oh, maybe it does, actually.
It stops right.
Oh, you know what it's also trying to do? It's the infinite page, so it's trying to board you to go to the next page.
Oh, now it's reset. I'm in a new page.
Exactly.
Oh, that's even weirder. I don't know why we got into this. Because my mind's on web redesigns.
Web design. Have you solved their problem, Leo?
Yeah, we had a great meeting today. We've got it all figured out.
Yay.
Yeah, I feel really good about it. We're working hard to make I think it's going to be a beautiful new website. And the challenge is we're doing some stuff that people just haven't done much in the past. Things like an API, a public API for our content. That's a big, big chunk to chew off.
The old canary in the coal mine. It's brave. It's brave, but it's good.
Oh, I feel good about this. And I know that some of our audience, some of you watching and listening right now, if we had a public API that you could say, hey, give me all the shows that talked about Lollipop in the last 5 days, and you could generate an RSS feed of your very own and maybe even give it to friends, that would be something I think people are very interested in. And that's the kind of thing we can do with the API. So
The Guardian has a public API of its content, and it sets conditions for its use that are interesting.
We all have rate limiting. I'm learning so much about stuff. That's what's fun for me. But you go through an API provider that there's a documented API. The API provider authenticates users of the API. So you'd have to create a code and get an API key, as you've seen, whenever you.
Yes.
And then there's some rate limiting, and we can, figure out how that works. We don't want somebody, sucking all our bandwidth with their custom program. It's interesting. It's really cool. So there's so much stuff, the web is moving so fast that, it's hard to even imagine, putting a place in the sand and saying, well, we're going to do, because the tide comes in and now you got to get a new place. It's very interesting.
It's true. And once you become an API provider, you start to realize why other API providers have limits in place.
Right. Well, we'll see. I may live to regret it, but we'll see.
I'm fascinated with the sites that have started without homepages and then now without sites, right? Vox and Quartz and Marshall Project started without homepages. And now you have Contently with no site, really. And now this news has got rid of its site entirely. It just lives on the internet wherever it lives.
I don't understand. So what you're saying is there's no front page, but there are pages of content.
No, not for Now This News. Let me see how this works.
How do you get to Now This News then?
It comes to you.
It comes to you.
I mean, it has a page. Like and follow Now This News everywhere. So you get it on Twitter, on Facebook, on YouTube, on wherever.
Oh, that's interesting.
They just made this change last week.
So I can't follow them on the web, but I can get their apps, or I could go to Tumblr.
Mm-hmm. Or mm-hmm. I could, so it's the service without the site. No site.
This is something, and we've been talking about this on Twit, because Nick Bilton wrote an article in the New York Times about Snapchat, and he said he's become a real advocate of Snapchat. This is the Snapchat homepage. And by the way, this is also nothing because you need the app.
Right.
But these are all brands that are posting stuff on Snapchat, including Yahoo News. Katie Couric's doing a newscast on Snapchat. Maybe that's where Brian Williams could go. Hey, Brian, the good news is 24 hours later, no matter what you say, no one knows.
No one's going to remember.
There's no record. I know. I feel bad because I like Brian. Yeah.
I do, too. But you can't. I feel bad for him.
Well, what do you think, Jeff? You're the journalism professor. Wait a minute. Let's take a break before you say anything. Okay. Let's do an ad. I'm actually really curious. It's kind of not. Look, anything's in our purview, right? This show, we could do anything we want.
Yes.
So let's talk about it, because that's an interesting question. Is was the punishment too harsh, too lenient? I mean, what did he do? Let's talk about that when we come back. And, of course, lots of Google stuff, including the return of the change log for one day only. A one-day engagement. I like it. And Google has announced that it's not just a search engine anymore. And Udi Manber has moved on. And we'll tell you why that's important. There's a lot to talk about, actually. Google I.O. coming to town. Our show today brought to you by LD Products. Ink and toner, my friends. It's all about the ink and toner. Look, can you imagine how many ink and toner cartridges are in landfills? What they are doing to our environment? Wouldn't you rather buy ink and toner cartridges that are from recycled cartridges that are as good as new, but save the environment a little bit, keeps oil and plastic and waste out of the landfills? You want to find out about LD Products, LDProducts.com. Of course, you can go to LD Products and get a great price on the original OEM cartridges and toner. But you might want to try, just try their own quality alternative, some as much as 75% less than the OEM product. And all their products are risk-free with a two-year, I don't know, I guess you could buy ahead, a two-year 100% customer satisfaction guarantee. You can return a product for any reason. And then what's really, really, really cool is their call center, their warehouse, and their headquarters are in a giant 110,000 square foot Platinum LEED certified building in Long Beach. LEED is an environmental building certification, and a Platinum LEED means this building is green all the way. I love it that they did this. This is LEED certification comes from the U.S. Green Building Council, and Platinum is as good as you can get. So if you're ready to get ink for your toner or your inkjet, you got to go to LD Products. Somebody sent me the funniest, let me see if I can find this, Valentine's Day ink. I don't know if I'll be able to find this meme. It was really, maybe it was on Twitter. It was very funny. The cost of ink is more than, you know, solid, molten gold. And anyway, this is the place to go to save a huge amount. In fact, not only are you going to save, we're going to get you an additional 10% off ink and toner and free shipping, excluding OEM products, when you go to ldproducts.com/twit. ldproducts.com/twit. Use the offer code TWIT. We've started to use this. This is a toner cartridge for our HP. Remanufactured means just less waste. It's better for the environment. And you're getting a great product that is totally guaranteed. ldproducts.com/twit. I wish I could find this. It was the funniest little cartoon. Oh, well. It's the problem when people tweet you.
if only you could search for it on Google, Alio.
Oh, you're right. You know, if only there were a way. Oh, well. So what did Brian Williams do, first of all?
As I think David Carr of the New York Times said, he gilded the lily so much he turned it into a different flower.
Hey, by the way, here's the image. I did find it. This Valentine's Day, surprise her with a cartridge of magenta. Nothing says I love you like printer ink. Gasoline, $2 a gallon. Coffee, $15 a gallon. Extra virgin olive oil, $150 a gallon. Nail polish, it's pretty pricey, $1,500 a gallon. Johnny Walker, 21-year-old black label whiskey, $4,200 a gallon. Chanel number 5 perfume, $6,060 a gallon. It all pales compared to printer ink, $16,218 per gallon for an inkjet. So give her a cartridge of magenta. Except if you get it at LD Products. Don't tell her you got it at LD Products because it's a lot less. All right. So he gilded the lily to the point where there was no lily to be found.
Right. And of course, he misremembered. And there it was a great Twitter memes, right? There's a picture of Brian Williams on the moon under the hashtag Brian Williams misremembers.
I feel like, though, that was the kind of misremembery that could have been accidental or...
It could have. The problem was how the story changed and how it amplified over time. And then I think that both
Brian Williams, who's been the anchor, he started as the anchor of MSNBC's nightly newscast. And I worked with him at the site at that time. In fact, I was on the show a few times and he was part of our launch of the site. And my virtual reality character, Dev Null, interacted with him. And I really liked Brian a lot. I thought he was funny. We've seen him many times on Letterman and Fallon, and he's wry, he's funny, he seems smart, and most importantly for a news anchor, he seems like he has integrity. He started anchoring NBC's nightly news, 15 years ago, 10 years ago? It's been a while.
Yeah.
I feel like it's more than 10 years ago, and is currently the highest rated news anchor in the United States. He's our generation's Walter Cronkite, if you will. Makes $10 million a year, just signed a new 5-year contract.
Well, not this year he's not going to, but
Well, that's right. But that's leading up. So that's the kind of who Brian Williams is. And disclaimer, I don't know him. I didn't hang out with him, but I've worked with him, and I always thought he was great. So he was talking about two things, right? One was his experiences in Iraq.
Right. Thought he was shot down by an RPG in a helicopter. Turns out not so much the case. Some debate as to whether or not he was behind that helicopter. Some said it was a sandstorm. But in any case, definitely wasn't. And
in 2006, when he said this, by the way, I'm told that the pilot who was flying the helicopter ahead of him that was shot down by an RPG wrote to NBC News and complained and said, no, he was in the one half an hour behind me. Williams was quoted as saying, I looked down the tube of an RPG as it took us out of the sky. Okay, that's one.
He kept bringing it up, and it got bigger and bigger and worse and worse, and then he thanked the guy who saved his life when he got shot down by the RPG, and the pilots just kind of had it. And then there's some debate about, I think it's still debate, about his coverage of Katrina. Did he see a body float by? Did he get dysentery? They said there was no dysentery when he drank some water. Or did he just have too much... too many beignets.
He did. He said that. I thought he said that, though. He saw a body float by in the French Quarter, and of course, there was no flooding in the French Quarter.
Well, there was some, but then there was some flooding in the French Quarter. Was it enough for a body to float by? There's a picture of him standing there with the water barely went up his soles of his shoe.
Right.
So the point at the end, I think a couple things. One is, from now on, when Brian Williams, if he goes out and covers a big story, what's going to happen? We're all going to question
suspect.
Everything he says. He's suspect. Yeah. And how is that going to affect his reporting? Two, I think he and NBC both waited too long, weren't transparent enough, didn't really dig into the story. My friend Jay Rosen says that if he was really the managing editor of NBC News, he should have dug into his own story. He should have been interviewed by people. He came up with a statement and then kind of they all hid. And so, of course, he was suspended for 6 months without pay. Thus, he'll only make $5 million this year. And Lester Holt is in his place. Now, the problem I have with this, I wrote a post on Medium about it this morning. Problem is that they're treading water for 6 months. Number one. Number two, I think it's an insult to Lester Holt, who I think is very good, though I happen to know they don't think he has enough personality. But... it may be good right now, but you could have an African-American sole anchor on a nightly news show, and they're not doing that. He's just there as a placeholder, which I think is insulting. And no matter what...
We should explain that the during the investigation, Williams recused himself from the nightly news, and Lester Holt, who's the weekend anchor, filled in. NBC did an internal investigation, which apparently was entirely done by people who know and love Brian Williams. The decision was to suspend him for 6 months without pay, $5 million. But the implication is he'll come back as the anchor of NBC Nightly News in 6 months.
I don't believe that's going to happen.
I said, when I heard this and I heard that he had suspended himself, I said, that's it. You're never going to see him on Nightly News again. And I still believe that's the case.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I talked to I happened to be sitting in Starbucks and ended up in a conversation with a crisis PR person. And I asked her, what would you advise NBC for Brian Williams? And she said, you know, take him off, lie low, have him come back and do a couple of really big interviews in a few months and then test the waters. For all I know, she advised him with this. But I don't think that works. So my argument today is that NBC's already been kicked in the kidneys. They have the opportunity to really reinvent TV news now. And I fear they're not going to, but they could make the NBC Nightly News into all kinds of things. You know, start with the punchline that was all over Twitter yesterday. A comedian Brian Williams and newsman Jon Stewart trade places. Turn it into get rid of the commodity news that we all know and like Vice, do stories we haven't seen and wow us with your narrative and your journalism. Turn it into a town square for America and have civilized, smart debates. Explain really difficult stories for us. Get rid of the show entirely. Go digital first and serve everybody on digital and on mobile, but use the show as a byproduct and a promotional vehicle. There's all kinds of options for how they could remake TV news. TV news badly needs to be remade.
You've been saying that for some time.
Yeah, we've done events at CUNY on this, and I'm going to do some more events on this. So I think there's actually an opportunity for NBC here. But what's NBC doing? Instead, they're in a self-imposed limbo, like a Star Trek episode, trapped in the glass of the screen, not changing for 6 months. And that's, you know, what is that going to do to the reputation that they have? What is that going to do to the show? What does that do to Lester Holt's reputation? What does it do to Brian Williams' reputation? I think that's the worst that could happen. And they've got to do something bold now. And the question is, Comcast owns half the damn world. Google owns the other half. Is there anybody with any guts in Comcast to say, you know what? Yeah, we make money on it, but the audience is dying. The audience is over 60 years old. We're fighting for the exact same audience with ABC and CBS. Let's do something new. Let's turn this into an opportunity. So that was my suggestion today.
It's certainly not related to the Brian Williams incident, but it is an opportunity.
To
rethink what nightly news is, and something that's probably long overdue, although obviously still makes them a lot of money.
Well, they wouldn't do it as number one. You know, don't rock the boat. Right. Don't mess with it. I happen, you know, full
now,
disclosure.
Now they have to because they've got to figure
now
out.
Now they have
to.
Six months from now. They bought themselves 6 months, right?
Right.
Well, but that's, Gina, that's what I'm saying. I don't know that they really did. I think that everybody's going to see it as, you know, just as I say, treading water on hold. Nothing new there. They're not going to do anything bold in those 6 months. I think they've got to be bolder, faster.
I agree. I think that they're probably in panic mode right now. When you're panicked and complete and frozen in fear, that's not the time that you're sort of emboldened to make a, you know, to kind of upend, you know, the whole thing. But they bought themselves a little bit of time. I mean, I agree. In 6 months from now, I would be very surprised if he came back on the air and everything was just the same. They're probably going to make some changes, right? But they had to buy themselves some time.
Is there any precedent for this, Jeff? I mean, it seems like this has never happened before.
Well, there was Dan Rather on 60 Minutes.
And by the way, Dan stood up for Brian, which I thought was nice.
Yeah. Gina, let me just push back on that for a quick second, because I think you're right. I think they're in panic mode. But when they're number one and making money, that's when they are least likely to disrupt themselves and do anything.
That's true.
There's a moment where you say, oh, WTF.
Right. We've got nothing to lose here.
Yeah, we suck the egg, man. They're not in that mode yet, but somebody at Comcast could be. Somebody there could say, you know, well, let's invent something new here.
No, you're right. I mean, I think it probably depends on how much money they make and how, you know, whether how well they think they can spin this and recover from it, you know, back into the status quo.
The problem is, in full disclosure, I attended a couple of NBC news executive offsites. I didn't get paid for it. God damn them. But I found it interesting. And it was, you know, it's off the record, so I'm not going to reveal it particularly. But the impression that I took away, you know, I'm talking about, oh, it's like my book, you know, the new relationships for news, new forms, new business model, do this, do that. they're in a different business. The entire business, all, you know, it's Brian. It's a star business entirely. They don't think that we watched the news. They think we watched Brian. And so that became a single point of failure, as we like to say in tech world, for the entire business. He tripped and the entire thing trips. And so there's a fundamental business problem here, business model problem here. And that's what they've got to realize.
It's kind of antiquated, though, on the other hand, to put that burden of veracity on a person when we have news sources, many news sources making crap up every minute and or exaggerating or. And of course, you have a fall guy, but isn't this? I mean, we're in a new era, and the notion that there is a news source of record anymore is kind of meaningless, isn't it? I mean, the days when Walter Cronkite could say we've lost the war, and that would be it. And Nixon said, "Oh crap," or Johnson said, "Oh crap, we've lost the war." Those days are long gone.
Gina, when was the last time you watched evening news?
Years. I mean, I used to visit my grandfather-in-law, and we would watch.
It would be right after Lawrence Welk and right before Jeopardy.
I'm not exaggerating. He was 93, and we watched 60 Minutes together. But like, as like, you know, that was a thing that we did together. I mean, maybe 5 years ago before he passed. I don't watch nightly. My mom, when she cooks, I mean, everyone that I know that watches nightly news, you know, is well over 65, 70.
That's
just not a thing. I mean, I, you know, when I was a kid growing up, that was, my mom had the 5 o'clock news on kind of while she was making dinner, but that's not part of my life at all. But to go back to the news of record and this idea of like this one person, I mean, right now, the thing that's, what compels people, what compels an audience is a personality and stories, right? So like, we love Brian Williams because he's a trusted person and he's a personality and he was telling a story and obviously trying to make it more compelling. This whole thing reminded me a little bit of the Mike Daisy thing that happened when he was telling the story about Apple. And I mean, of course, he's not Brian Williams. But I remember just being so just absolutely outraged that this guy could have, you know, stretched the truth so far that it no longer resembled anything that was actually true. But I think that that Daisy is a storyteller at heart, and embellishment is part of storytelling. And it's about, you know, creating this narrative and creating this emotional pitch for an audience and bringing them along. And I know I'm a writer. I do it.
And there's no material that what he lied about or made up or exaggerated is probably the right word. Didn't have any material impact on the news itself.
It didn't. And I'm sure in a lot of ways, Brian felt like he looked down the barrel of an RPG, even though, you know, because I mean, he was like, wow, I was half an hour behind or following a helicopter that got shot at. That could have been me. Right. Like, I've made these connections in my mind. I mean, even when I look back at 9/11, which was kind of this big traumatic thing for me, I think, you know, it's funny. I did a talk at XOXO about my 9/11 experience. And I did the Google Street View from the corner where I was standing. And I swear that my memory is that I could see the towers burning, I couldn't see the Freedom Tower from the current Google Street. And that was just my memory. I mean, our memories change and you superimpose images that you see after them, and every retelling, it changes. So I feel kind of bad for him because I know how this works and how this happens. Like I mean, you know, you could say that it was malicious because he was trying to embellish and make the story more compelling and build up his own personality and you know, make it seem like he was more important and in the middle of it than he actually was. And maybe that was part of it. But memory is a weird, strange thing.
And also the quote, I looked down the barrel of the tube of an RPG that had been fired at us, was not as part of the nightly news, but was in an interview with a student. Fairfield University student TV network. I mean, it wasn't on his nightly news show. The story did change. He apologized, saying that, you know, I confused what happened. He was riding in the helicopter behind the one that was hit, and it confused the events of 12 years ago. But I think the issue is that the story changed more than that.
I think that's really it. I think it's the reaction to it. I think you're right, very right, Gina. I mean, I worry about this too. You know, I think about me in 9/11, and where I was.
We
and what
all
I
do
saw.
That. It's normal.
And but I mean, David Carr, again, tried to say that what he did didn't have an impact on what he does for a living. And I'm sorry, I got to disagree there. One should try to hold oneself to a higher standard. At the same time, he's human. And at the same time, I go back, it's part of the problem is TV. Jay Rosen, again, quoted, said somebody from TV, you know, tweeted him and said, you got to understand that on television, the correspondent doesn't actually do much of the journalism at all. The producers and these other people do, and the correspondent, but then they may not take credit for anything. The correspondent takes it on.
Right.
And that's what they do. And you're right, Gina, they make, you know, they're about trying to make compelling narratives, and you can see how he got carried away, but I can also see how once exposed and not having dealt with it, I think in a very forthright way, it affects his credibility and thus the credibility of the network.
Actually,
that's true. I think that's true. They definitely didn't handle it well. But I mean, you know, look, this is the human reaction to it. To, I made a mistake. Is like how can I cover this up, or it wasn't
absolutely
so bad, or you know.
Well, and I think Gina, that's really important too. I think, you know, I always credit blogs with having. I mean, Craig Silverman, who wrote a wonderful book called "Regret the Error," I wrote the foreword for it. And as I did that and I thought about it, I remember my early days in journalism. You're right. The last thing you ever wanted to do was admit that you made a mistake. It was the most shameful thing because we're perfect. Right. And what blogging taught me, you know, the first time I made a mistake and erased it and got slapped for it, I learned a lesson about how to make mistakes openly. And the primary lesson I learned is that when you correct yourself, you don't reduce your credibility, you enhance your credibility. TV doesn't know that. When was the last time you saw a correction on TV before Brian Williams? It never corrects itself. It doesn't have that ethic that we now take as our norm.
Yeah, that's so funny. That's so true. At Lifehacker, one of the earliest, most difficult editorial decisions I had to make is that we never pull a post and that we show any edits that like change the content. You know, a typo we would fix without showing that we changed a typo. But if you know, if we had published the wrong piece of information, that we would strike it out and then do an update, a dated update. And that was tough. And it was tough for me because I didn't want to forever and ever for there to be a note of the fact that we made a mistake when we first published something.
Right.
A particularly painful situation we had, we were putting instructions on how to edit your Windows registry, which can really bork a machine, and we screwed up the instructions. Wow. and I felt like a complete jackass. And you know, and my first you know, response was like, oh, let's just change it, you know, change it and not acknowledge. But you know, there were a bunch of comments from people that said, you guys got this wrong. But it's true, blogging is you know, and that's when we see the, you know, Wikipedia revisions and things like GitHub, is that you see things are a work in progress and they get changed and fixed.
Does it make any difference that he didn't do this on the nightly news, but the exaggerations always occurred with, you know, interviews by student reporters or David Letterman or Alec Baldwin? I mean,
why was he being interviewed? Because he was on the nightly news.
But, all right. I mean, I think you're right. I think the damage to credibility means he probably.
But if.
It's not like he lied on nightly news at all, ever. These were in later recollections within kind of more personality driven venues.
He did it in a huge stadium.
Yeah.
You know, that's the issue. He did it in very public places using his fame and notoriety. Listen, if he lied to his wife about where he was last night, that's their business.
Right.
That doesn't affect his credibility. If he lies in public, I have sympathy for him too. I think he's a good guy. I don't think he did this maliciously. I don't think he tried to say I'm gonna hornswoggle the world here. I think, but
he was.
I still have to come back to it affects his credibility.
He's probably inflating. A couple of possibilities, but that he was inflating his own reputation, which would be bad, or that he really wanted to make it a more interesting story because he's on Letterman, and it has to be more interesting because he's on Letterman than just a news report. Anyway, I feel bad. Yeah. I guess there's nothing more
let's be known that nothing wrong has ever been said on the Twit Network, though.
Well, maybe that's why I feel so bad for him, because
yeah.
I make up crap all the time.
I've never told any kind of embellished story. No exaggerations, nothing.
You know, well, actually, Leo, the problem with being every week is that when I do screw up, and I have screwed up on this show often, I have to remind myself to remember that the next week I should correct myself. And that's not easy to do.
Right.
The post-Twig walk home is always filled with, I wish I had said this, or I wish I had done this a little bit differently. Just so look at the inner mind of a host. I'm always like, damn, I should have said this.
Yeah.
I wish I had put that a different way.
Udi Manber, who is a name you might recognize, has left Google. He was 9 years at Google, then later at YouTube. He joined in 2006 from Amazon. He founded the A9 Lab, which was Amazon's attempt to create a search engine. In fact, one of the reasons I recognize the name is because he's featured in Brad Stone's The Everything Store. He went to Google, led Project Null, which was kind of like Null isn't short for knowledge. It was a database of information. Didn't really take off. He helped create Helpouts using Hangouts, which is actually a great and very little used, I think, Google feature, Hangouts feature. And then he worked on YouTube Search most recently. He's going to the National Institutes of Health, which is cool.
And other departures, Krishna Bharat, who created Google News as a extra project, just announced on this weekend on Google Plus that he's leaving after 15 years.
Wow.
And what's his name? The head of knowledge who set the new record for jumping off.
Oh.
He left too.
Really?
Mm-hmm. What's his name? I don't have the knowledge of his
the
knowledge.
The guy who jumped out of the thing.
With yeah, the thing.
Set the new record for skydiving.
Oh, come on,
while Jammer, looking down the barrel of an RPG over Hurricane Katrina, I believe.
What's his name?
I can't remember it. Google I.O., May 28th to May 29th. We're going to have to go through this rigmarole again, getting you guys in.
Oh, boy. Yep.
Now, Gina, yep. I don't know if I can I can leverage your.
I think as long as if only if Gina comes back full time, she can get into Google I/O.
Oh, I man, think we might have to make you do that.
Well, Leo, I was going to say to you, I'd be happy to be of service in whichever way. I mean, if it would be easier for me to watch the stream and cover the stream,
I think
we'll have you remotely.
That. Yeah,
like I will absolutely at minimum do that.
And I presume Jeff, you're planning to go, right?
Well, if they let me in. Yeah. Notice this year it's Thursday, Friday. That's different.
Oh.
Wednesday, okay. Thursday in the past.
And I'm going to throw an application in, you know.
Of course.
Sure.
Of course.
Why not?
Actually, if it's Thursday, Friday, so will I. Maybe we'll get Mike Elgin to see. He wants to go, I know. And Jason, you want to go, don't you? Of course you do.
Yeah, I have gone quite a few years. But,
yeah.
You know, every single year it's the same song and dance, right?
Right. We have to
right up until the bitter end, we're in a cold sweat, and somehow it happens.
March 17th, 9 a.m. Pacific, tickets go on sale. But that really is a meaningless information, because if it's anything like in the past, tickets will sell out within a few seconds. Literally.
I saw some reference to a lottery.
Well, they did a lottery last year, didn't they?
Right.
There's an application process, and the people they offer tickets to, it has no bearing. Like, the order in which you order or apply has no bearing on who gets the tickets. So it isn't going to be this rush where it's like everyone's refreshing their web. You know, it doesn't need to be.
That's kind of cool. Did you see that? This is very material design, isn't it? This is the Google I.O. page. Here's the countdown. It looks out. Cut out pieces of paper counting down till 33 days until registration begins. So
Speaking of paper, I love the new lower third here, Leo. I like the
Isn't that
I like
nice?
The sun. I like We've the blue light. Yeah, you got material.
Who did that? Did Anthony Nielsen do that?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. Yeah, we've gotten material on our on our album art. Well, you know why we had to do that? We had to take this. There was this person on the album art.
You're killing me. killing me.
Abandon us.
Oh. He has some residual feelings. We're going to have to talk about this.
No, it's okay.
It's all good.
It's okay.
You still like me.
I still love you. That's the problem.
Oh, that's the problem.
I know.
If I didn't like you, it wouldn't be a problem.
This is an unrequited podcast.
Yes.
You guys are too kind.
Alan Eustace. Thank you, Virgil, in the chat room. Alan Eustace is the name.
Thank you.
Google I.O., 2 days of inspirational talks, hands-on learning, and a chance to hear more about Google's latest developer products. Developers really want to go to this, right, Gina? This is where you find out what's going on.
Yeah, you want to go. You want to go to I.O. because you know you're going to get some mad goodies that maybe no one else has. You know you're going to get to be in the room. Listen, there have been a couple of I.O.s that have been amazing. The wave demonstration, I wasn't actually at that I.O., but that's when I decided I would start
yeah.
going. The skydiving with Google
Glass.
Wow. Amazing. You have an opportunity to get that. I mean, you got to remember, before anybody had Google Glass was really exciting. The Android Wear. I mean, you're just first on some really, really cool technology. So if you're a developer, you definitely want to go.
Google's doing I.O. extended events for developers who can't get to I.O. or don't get tickets. So you'll be able to attend live streamed sessions, local developer demos, hackathons, and more. And they do intend to stream the keynote as they have before. And they say select sessions as well. So I think they really understand that people, not everybody can get to I.O.
I feel a little guilty taking up a chair as a non-developer, but I also find it just so telling as to what they're doing, how they're thinking.
Jason, turn on the audio on my laptop, because I just noticed on the website there's this little slider thing, and when I tap it, it says Chrome Experiment Ahead. The experiment features WebGL and Web Audio APIs. You might want to grab headphones.
I have your audio up.
Make some noise, and I just clicked make some noise. Let's... Oh! Oh! What am I seeing?
The I.O. site's always so nervy.
There's always something in here. It's a keyboard. Get ready to record.
Boy.
I'm playing. That sucks. What should I do?
Scroll up and down.
Scroll? I can't scroll. Okay. Now arrow in upper left. Oh. So you guys have already played with this, huh?
Wow.
Jason?
I actually haven't played with this. I knew that there was something going on here, but I hadn't checked it out yet.
Move the big circles.
Whoa. Okay. Wow.
So that they get hit by the dots. Because every time they get hit by the dots, you get a drum beat.
Oh, this is very, very similar to an app called Nodebeat.
Oh, you've seen something like this?
There's an Android app called Nodebeat. We had it on all that Android years ago. And
it's
similar to this in some ways.
Look, this changes the beat.
Well, what's very interesting here is this is all happening inside the browser, right?
This is a WebGL.
Yeah.
So this is the Google I.O. site, and I just happen to click a link. So what else can I do, I ask you? So should I record my...
Get ready to record.
I am such a nerd, but this is so cool. They did this. They always do this. They always have something,
they always
right?
They do this, yeah.
And in a way, it kind of is a little bit telegraphs the kind of the kinds of things we're going to see. So what does this thing do? Oh, this is like a rubber band machine.
Oh, you move the... Yeah.
Man, that is crazy that's happening in a browser. That is all HTML.
So this is like, these are like rubber bands, and you put them in the peg holes, and then, but what happens?
And then you can play them.
And then I have to strum them. See, I don't know how hard or easy this is to do. But I bet you this is a lot of agile points to develop. That's all I'm saying.
a
lot of agile points here.
We need this functionality built into the new Twit site.
I'm going to call our developers and say, guys, I need the... Okay, should I record? All right.
You can get a new Twig theme this way.
Yeah, this might be the new Twig theme.
This is Twig.
Wait a minute, now, does it have a higher pitched if I stretch it more? I can't. Yeah.
All right. Geek out.
Now what? I already did this one. I did this one. That's it. Now what do I do? Let's pause. share song, reset to default, exit experiment. So it's just a little, it's a little, little instrument there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my, this is really cool. But my cynical response to this is like every year the IO site has some crazy, you know, cool Chrome experiment with this, you know, insanely dynamic, neat functionality. And Google does make beautiful Chrome experiments. You just don't see anybody else making anything like this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel like it's working. Like, I think this is a really cool showcase of what's possible. I just don't see a whole lot of uptake on it.
Yeah. That's a good
unless
point.
I'm looking at the wrong sites. I mean, maybe there are browser-based games and other things that I'm just not, that I'm missing. But
I can just tell you right now that knowing what I know about the cost of web development, this is the last thing I would ask for.
Yeah.
Oh, incidentally, can we have a WebGL experiment in our website, please?
Do you think one person made that?
Probably, right?
Yeah.
Probably took them all a year. Is this somebody saying this is going to die when HTML5 comes along? Isn't this HTML5? It's a WebGL as a plugin.
So. Yeah, WebGL is a plugin.
And Web Audio API would probably be an API within HTML5, I would guess.
Right.
I think you'd have to have the, you know, in other words, this only works in Chrome right now because
right.
No other browser.
Chrome experiment. Yeah.
Yeah. No other browser supports. Do any browsers besides Chrome support WebGL? Seems like a Googly thing
that
to do.
That's a good question.
Let's Google WebGL support. Yeah. I wonder how we could figure that out. Browsers that support WebGL. Yeah, apparently some browsers do. Here's a table. 11, IE 11 and up. Firefox 35 and up. iOS Safari 8.1 and up.
Chrome is way ahead there.
Light green is partial support. Red is no support. Dark green is full support. So, Opera Light is partial support. Safari on the desktop, partial support. Safari on iOS, full support, oddly enough. This is an interesting.
Wait a second. Chrome for Android is partial support?
Yeah. It's harder to do. Yeah. If you want WebGL on a mobile device, get an iPhone. Oddly enough.
Wacky.
Method of generating dynamic 3D graphics using JavaScript accelerated through hardware. That's what WebGL is.
That's all.
And this is in the U.S. But that's for market share. Oh, no, that's global market share. Huh. There you go. Wow. It's amazing what you can learn these days. All right, moving along. So we'll all try to go to Google I.O. We will certainly cover the keynote or notes live. Thursday and Friday is great. Thank you, Google. Usually they've overlapped with This Week in Google, but now we can they'll be out of our way and we'll be out of their way. Google has added a virtual Genius Bar. Have you seen this?
I think Genius Bar is trademarked, surely.
Yeah. They're actually using helpouts. It's called Google Device Experts.
It's kind of like Mayday from Google.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. So employees involved with the service told TechCrunch it's been in testing since November. Google spokesperson said we're in a limited trial of an experimental support feature gathering feedback, not yet ready to share.
Is this the
full
thing we
plans.
Called that day? On
no,
the show?
It's different.
This is in the devices section of Google Play. So you're on the web, you're in Google Play in the devices section. Click the help icon top right corner, and then under contact us, there will appear a video call button, and that will give you a Google Hangouts with a Google expert who can help you.
So we can't call anybody now?
Well, I can try it. They say you can share your screen, so this is very much like Mayday, isn't it?
Hmm.
So let's go to play.google.com and see what we can do. I don't think it's rolled out yet. I think it's just something they've spotted.
Yeah.
So there's devices. Here's help. Is video call.
Video call. Yep.
How can we help you? What do I need?
I broke my Nexus 6.
I use. Yeah. No. Can I use
Skype on Chrome OS?
Skype
on
Chrome OS? Question mark. Start a video call. Wow.
Sorry.
Oh, this is going to be good.
I'm not trying to troll them, but, you know, why not?
Yeah. You're the first one here. Ready to join. Now, I think, would you like to share your screen? We have to kind of tell somehow. Yeah, don't show this. We have to tell them we're doing this before we actually do it somehow. Share my screen. Google Hangouts is sharing your screen with plus.google.com. Your screen sharing. Present to everyone. But I'm not. They hear my audio, but no one is coming in the room.
Oh.
They're getting something out of the microwave.
Oh. Hey. How you doing? Can I? I'm on a. Don't play his audio yet. I'm on a podcast called This Week in Google. My name's Leo. And I'm wondering if I can show people, because we're showing people this new feature, if I can show people your screen and we can record your voice. But Doug, before I can show this, I need your permission to record it.
Yeah, go for it, Leo.
Go for it, Leo. Hey. All right. Thank you, Doug. Yay. So everybody's going to see you now.
Hi,
yes, and I have nothing confidential on my screen, so go ahead and look at it.
Well, thank you for sharing your screen. But, yeah, I saw that you had a question about using Skype on Chrome OS.
Yeah, can I?
So currently, Skype is currently not supported on Chrome OS. There are, however, great alternatives for video chatting on Chrome or on Chromebooks as well, as well as communication apps that are available on the Chrome Web Store, including Hangouts. Are you familiar with Hangouts?
I am. We love Hangouts. In fact, this is Helpouts, isn't it? Isn't that what we're using right now?
We're on a Hangout right now. I know Hangouts is kind of similar to Hangouts, but we're actually just straight up on
Hangouts.
This is
just plain old Hangout. And yeah. Doug, are you a Google employee or are you a third party or?
Yeah, I work at Google. We're here in beautiful Mountain View.
You're in Mountain View. I love your set. That looks so cool with the Android stuff there.
You know, we are very googly here at Google.
I know. Do you know how many of you are there doing this?
I know we do have a small team. I wouldn't be able to put a number to it, though. I'm really bad at math and counting.
That's okay. But there are other people, and you're all kind of near each other doing this?
Yeah, kind of. I'm not too sure how big the team is, but yeah. I do have my own team here, and we are all kind of our team of device experts.
Now, were you a Google employee before this, or were you hired specifically to do this kind of support?
You know, actually, because you are kind of our press, we do kind of.
You can't talk to me. I understand. Doug?
I do have a link for you if you like. It's press@google.com.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that. And I apologize for ambushing you, but that's why we asked you.
No, not at all. I'm definitely here. If I can, you know, help spread the word or kind of.
Well, you are.
What we're doing. That's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah, lots of people now are going to try this out. And I love, Doug, how you shared that link with me. And I could just, it was in a little window down here, and I could just click that to go to press.google.com. That was cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, this is really neat.
Hey, Doug, you're great. You want to be a really cool host This Week in Google?
Yeah, we could hire you as a host at This Week in Google. We got to replace Gina here. Hey, it's very nice to meet you, Doug. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was really great talking to you, Leo.
All right. It's a great demo of what you guys can do.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
If you ever need help, go ahead and shoot us another Hangout.
I will. I love it. Just another. Bye, Doug.
Bye, Doug.
Bye, Doug.
Bye.
That is so cool.
That is great.
He was a good sport.
A good sport.
That never gets old. Calling Google support on this show never gets old.
No.
I know you did it first on All About Android.
No, but I think it's great. I think it's awesome. And I would imagine you guys are pretty darn impressed as I am, because for the longest time, Google and support have not been two words that have shared, like,
a human.
Been associated with good. Yet both of these times that we've done it on this show, the response has been super quick. They've, you know, I'm sure if we would have dove in with a, you know, pretty hardcore question, probably would have got a good answer. I'm pretty impressed.
And by the way, he did not refer to a notebook or anything, at least not that I could see. He knew the answer.
Yeah, he wasn't doing a page 78.
Yeah, let me go to So you do that by going to the Play Store and clicking the question mark icon, and then under Contact Us, there's a video call. At least there was on mine. There's also live chat and phone, and that is impressive for people who have in the past said, "Oh, I don't know, I can't get support from Google." Now they don't do this for Gmail and stuff like this. Although he did answer a question about Chrome OS.
Yeah, he did.
Wow. That is sweet. Well, they sell Chromebooks here. So, they sell products here that are cover the entire spectrum of Google stuff.
Now, if I'd been obnoxious, I could have asked whether there's any possible use for my Google Glass.
Wouldn't that be interesting? Because Glass is still available in the store. And
no, it's not. You can't buy, I think they can't buy it.
They just have it there.
I don't think you buy it.
But I think they would still support it if you asked.
And let's just, for the record, anybody listening from Google, don't get the guy in trouble for not going to press first. He was a great demo of the product. This was a wonderful thing to do. He was wonderful.
Yeah. I felt like he at the appropriate moments.
He handled it beautifully.
Yeah. He handled it beautifully.
And I think it was good for people to see in real time what it looked like to actually make a call, how long it took. And I apologize. You know, we're in the state of California, which is what they call a two-party state. We cannot in any way broadcast the audio or video of the call until we have permission. Unfortunately, in order to do that, they had to turn it up a little bit.
Yeah, I had to put it up just a tiny bit so you could hear it.
So we can edit that out or something. But, so the live audience got a little leak of something that they shouldn't have. But I thought he did very nicely at that. And he could have said, no, you can't. If you're press, I'm sorry, I can't talk to you. But I think it was appropriate that he did what he did. We got a very good idea of what could happen.
And the great thing is Google is indeed human.
Yeah.
There is a human face of Google.
Love it, and very human. Nice. I liked him.
Yeah, nice guy.
Yeah, nice
teacher. Background.
He was standing up, which is impressive. That's an interesting – that's a conscious choice, right? Obviously, he's not standing right now. He's waiting for somebody else to call.
He's obviously standing on a set with lighting and background, and certainly better than mine with the sun setting and my light changing. He was ready and set up. Although that was device support, right? He said this is support for devices. What I'd like to see is somebody whose Gmail account was shut down because of a terms of service violation, or somebody's AdSense account that's in some sort of suspended state. I would like to hear the script or the response to, "Hey, I can't log into my Gmail account. I'm locked out. You know what happened?"
Right. Well, what's interesting, too, is that, I mean, having an employee in Mountain View, that's a very high expense item.
No kidding.
Real estate and such.
No kidding.
That's interesting. Maybe it's just a test and they're figuring it out, but that surprises me.
Yeah.
But good. That's what they need to do.
Chickenhead 21 in our chat room says, you should show this to Comcast. Oh, Comcast. Actually, I want to show Comcast Google's new robotic dog.
Boston, this thing is so cool.
Boston Dynamics. That's the one that did that crazy running robot. They've got a new one. This is called Spot. Google owns this company. Oh, he's so cute. Mm-mm. Notice, by the way, the previous running robots had big, long wires attached to them. This guy does
not.
Right,
now he's wireless,
He's wireless. Look, he's coming to bother people. They just ignore the dog.
Like, no big deal. We see this all the time.
Yeah, this guy's
look, he kicked it.
I feel so bad about them kicking this dog.
I know. Like, I totally agree. This one right here, I'm just like.
On ice.
That wasn't nice to do to the robot.
But that shows you how, I don't want to say anthropomorphic because it's a dog, but how realistically you kind of assume this is a live creature.
Yeah, I know.
Because it's not. It's just a machine. You kick your computer all the time, right? It's just a computer with legs.
Sometimes.
Walking on ice, on gravel. Look at this. And again, can we hear audio?
I have audio potted up, but I don't know.
I don't hear the that we heard with the other robotic dog.
Yeah. Is there a volume in the player? Or?
Maybe I don't have the player turned up. Oh, yeah. Let me turn on the audio. Let's see. It's pretty quiet.
What must could be that be for a wheelchair? Is a wheelchair? What would that
be? Well, didn't
the trot?
The guy who created the Segway created a wheelchair that could go upstairs.
That's right.
It can run along. Oh, that's so cute.
Well, that looks like stormtrooper marching.
Yeah,
those two look like stormtroopers.
I'm not sure. We are coming for you.
Here we are, human. You puny humans.
You rang?
Fire rocket guns.
The future of war.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty terrifying, actually.
God, what would you do if you had an army of those things headed right towards you?
I don't know. I just wanted to carry my groceries home.
Remember Boston Dynamics? Before they bought Boston Dynamics, the company did have, in fact, some defense contracts. So this is, what is that, a pig? It's a motorized pig. And I think Google said that whatever existing contracts they had, they would continue. No robots were harmed. Show this in the making of this video.
It knows that the kicking is disturbing.
It's very disturbing. So this has got to be electric. They've come a long way.
What was that noisy one? Was that a gas engine or the noisy
one? That was
one?
The one that looked like a pig.
But there was what was noisier? Was that because it was a gas engine?
I think it must have been, yeah. Wow, it's got LiDAR on the head. See that spinning thing? That's how it
sees a self-driving car when you have a self-driving...
It's just sort of sad how it just kind of gets back up and keeps
going.
It's
like, go ahead, kick me again. It's cool.
Just kick me again, man.
Fine, whatever.
The good news is these robots have 4 minutes battery life, so all you have to do is run for 4 minutes and you're okay. Wow. All right.
I can watch these for hours.
I know.
Yes.
We're actually rerunning the video just because we like it so very, very much. Our show today brought to you by It Makes Me Want to Nap. So thank God I have my Casper ready to hand. Our show today brought to you by my new mattress from Casper.com. Who would ever think you'd be buying, but who would ever think you'd see walking robotic dogs? Who would ever think you'd be buying mattresses on a website? Don't you want to lie on the mattress, you might ask? How about this? Of course you want to lie on the mattress before you buy it. But the problem is 5 minutes on a mattress in a showroom with the saleswoman looking down her nose at you is no way to test a mattress. With Casper, you get free delivery and 100 days to sleep on that thing, 100 nights, to decide if you want it. And then if you don't, painless returns. They come and they get it, and it's fine. You know, you get your money back. It's completely risk-free. The Casper mattresses are long-lasting. They're comfortable. There's good back support. They combine memory foam, nice firm memory foam with latex. Nice firm latex with memory foam, so it conforms to your body but gives you a nice support. You can see I'm very comfortable on my new Casper mattress. They're made in the USA. They are premium mattresses, but by eliminating the resellers, the showrooms, they save you a lot of money. Casper mattresses start at $500 for a twin, $950 for a king size, and we're going to give you $50 if you use the offer code TWIG, T-W-I-G, at Casper.com/TWIG. Even Ozzy loves our Casper mattress. I liked it so much I got one for my son. He's in college and living off campus. He needed a mattress. No way. He's on the third floor. They were going to get a full-size mattress up three flights of stairs. So we got him a Casper. He loves it. Casper.com/TWIG. He says, Dad, I sleep on it every night. I said, really? Every night? Well, most nights. Casper.com/TWIG. Save $50 when you use the offer code TWIG. I'm telling you, I love my Casper. You will too.
Do you think maybe it might be a time for some trumpets of some sort?
I didn't even think of that.
You wanna,
we got Gina. Can we do the change log?
The Google change log.
Our live studio audience is applauding. All three of them.
It's music to my ears. Have you guys have not, have the trumpets been retired?
Yeah, we don't do the change log without Gina Trapani. Gina Trapani is here with the latest from Google.
Google takes on Yelp Elites with its new local guides program. This is a new feature in Google Maps where you can opt in to become a local guide if you go to google.com/local/guides. And it's a program that's meant to kind of encourage people to go out and post well-written and informed reviews for local places. And basically, if you opt in to become a local guide, you get a couple of benefits. You get access to a special email newsletter, an opportunity to join hangouts with other reviewers. You get to host and attend special events. You get to moderate local guides, Google Plus communities. Google just gives you a couple of goodies here and there for beefing up their reviews. So if you're into that, like I said, google.com/local/guides. It's very similar to Yelp's Elites program. If you're looking for a little bit more Google Drive storage, you can get 2 gigabytes of extra drive space for free by completing Google's security checkup. This is just a little quiz, it seems like. I haven't had a chance to run through it myself. That basically checks to make sure that your Google settings are up to date, your security settings and privacy settings. So you'll run through a couple of checks that will make
it's
sure
it's very simple. I did it. It takes 2 seconds just to make sure that you have a backup phone number and an email address in case you get hacked. Make sure that it shows you where your authorizations are so that you can review that and you get in the habit of it. It's very simple.
Yeah, it looks like this is just stuff that you should be doing anyway, but Google's just sweetening the pot a little bit by offering this extra 2 gigabytes.
My view is, I think that if you do two-step authentication, they ought to send you a T-shirt.
Yeah, seriously.
This was for Safer Internet Day. That's kind of neat. Yeah.
Yeah,
cool. Yeah.
We talked about that on Sunday because Larry Magid was one of the guys behind it and was down there at Facebook with Cheryl and a bunch of other people to promote this. So thank you, Google, for participating in Safer Internet Day.
Yeah, it's great.
It also shows how much 2 gigs has been devalued.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously.
We'll give you 2 gigabytes.
It's like S&H green stamps.
Yeah. So I didn't even have to do anything. I just got 3 check marks just because I'd already done that.
Boom, boom, boom. Recently had said yes. My recovery information is correct. Is correct. My recent sign-in activity looks good.
Yeah, I do that all the time. So.
Yeah, and I'm sure surely you have two. So, does it check to see if you have two-factor enabled? Or
no,
that seems kind of advanced.
It doesn't.
It's not, they're not requiring you do that, which is
it
too
should,
bad.
But two-factor is a lot.
I guess.
I think it's a lot to expect of regular, of normals still.
Grandma.
They also have this nice safety center that shows you, how to prevent cybercrime, manage your privacy and safety and security. And then there's safety tools here. These are all the tools Google offers. This is great. Love this. Nice.
Well, speaking of Google giveaways, if you've got a Chromecast, Google wants to give you $6 in Play Store credits.
And it works. Yeah. I did it twice.
Did you do it?
Two Chromecasts, $6.
I have 3 Chromecasts.
Yeah, you get $18.
Very, very nice.
Oh.
Yeah, so you just have to be on the network that your Chromecast is. And if you go into the Chromecast app on iOS or Android, you can go to the Check for Offers button. It's in the hamburger menu, I believe. And if you check for offers, there's often a few different things in there. But this offer is basically, it's a $6 gift card to Google Play. I mean, I guess they're hoping that you're going to rent a movie for Valentine's Day, I guess, or buy something from the Play Store.
Didn't we get something just when we bought the Google Chromecast originally?
Yeah, at this point, the Chromecast is, at least in the U.S., is pretty much paid for itself if you bought it day one.
I think I've made money.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Google has been, I've just been pretty impressed with how loosely they're giving away content. X-Men also, if you log in to the offers page with your Chromecast, they're offering the first X-Men movie for free in HD. Just a bunch of free content that they keep giving away.
By the way, just real quickly, if you have two-factor turned on, I just redid the security checkup. They do have you go through the two-factor settings and verification. So I actually have 5 check marks, green check.
Ooh.
Fancy pants.
Yeah.
You're super safe.
It's worth doing this, though, because it does remind you of what apps you've permitted, what Android devices you're using and things like that. It's good to do this. And six, how do we get our $6?
$6 is in that you want to go into the Chromecast app on your mobile device, and you should be connected to the same network that your Chromecast is on.
Cool.
I think, look, the reality is that these giveaways, that they really want people to use the Play Store more. And I think it's about movies and TV.
More than it is about Chromecast. Yeah.
More than it is about like apps or devices. If I had an extra $6 and I'd never bought from the Play Store before, I might rent a movie. Right. And then once you start to sort of amass a library in the Play Store, it's like, okay, at this point I've got libraries, I've got iTunes videos that I purchased, I've got Amazon, Prime Instant Video, I've got Google Play. I'm like, I know I have this movie, but which one is it? You have to check all the different places.
Is that it?
That's it. That's all I got.
It's the cue.
Play the trepannies. The trepanny timpanies.
the trepanny timpanies.
We call them trepannies now.
The
trimpannies. That's the Google change log. Oh, we missed it. Nice to have. See why we like the change log? Look at that. You made us money. You got me gigs. Really good.
Yeah.
Thank you to Jason for putting that together because I was utterly unprepared. So thank you, Jason.
Jason's good. You know what? Jason, unfortunately, he's so good that I've stopped doing any work at all.
It's all right. I have my sources.
I just go, what happened today? And he tells me. It's great. It's great. Here's one that Jason, actually, you guys talked about it last night.
No, we didn't. This you actually didn't? Kind of popped up today, yeah.
What's up with Android Wear? What's the story? Research firm Canalys says only 720,000 Android Wear watches were shipped in the last 6 months of 2014. That's the same period that Apple sold 114 million iPhones. You can pretty much guarantee that they'll sell more than a million Apple watches in the first day, I would guess. Does this mean Android Wear is, as research analyst at Canalys says, not very good?
No.
No, you dope.
Oh.
We love Android Wear. In fact, I think it's very good. He says the battery life is one of the reasons they haven't taken off, arguing Google should have further streamlined the mobile operating system so they could last longer than a day.
It gets me through every day.
I don't think longer than a day. I don't know where that comes from. I've heard real people say it, too. But don't you plug in your phone at night when you go to bed? Don't you put your watch on your on the stand at night when you go to bed? I mean, it's just what we do now. Yeah, you have a Pebble, Chris. Chris is shaking his head. But you have a Pebble. And your Pebble can't do doodly diddly squat. And it's not even in color. And you don't have a sweep second hand.
And you don't have a touch screen.
Or a touch screen. And you can't talk to your Pebble. I think that actually Android Wear is really good.
I think it is too.
But well, we shall see.
Jason's note in the law. As you're right. You're not just, yeah.
Jason made a great note. Yeah.
Yeah.
He said, compare that to the number of iPods sold. In 2001, it was 125,000, one-eighth of that, or whatever, one-sixth of that.
Yeah, I mean, between 2001 and 2002, the iPod sold 725,000 units, which is roughly about the same as this.
In 2 years.
In 2 years. And, you know, they're comparing it against the iPhone, which, they're different categories. I just don't know if it's a very fair comparison to compare a watch, which is an accessory that ties to something,
well,
versus an iPhone that's like this.
I do have to say, though, the comparison thing that will be important is in April when the Apple Watch comes out. And you know.
Yeah.
The lemmings
are going to run to the store.
I even switched to an iPhone so I could get used to this so that I can buy the Apple Watch when it comes out.
Wow. Well, but then you have Tim Cook, who I thought these quotes were a little obnoxious. He gave a keynote this week, and he basically said there's no such thing, nothing you'd call a smartwatch yet. And
I don't think that's fair. I think that the Moto 360 is great.
I do too. They also said that sitting is the new cancer, so that your Apple Watch is going to buzz at you and bug you if you sit for too long. No thanks, Apple. No.
What?
Sitting is Apple. The new cancer.
You could turn that off. You could turn that off.
I know, but I thought it was obnoxious.
Well, it makes Jason Jobs proud. I mean, you know, that kind of trash talk is kind of what Apple does. Yeah. I just added to the rundown. My friend Paul Ford wrote a piece on Medium actually about it's called "It's Kind of Cheesy Being Green," and I didn't even know this. And I do use iOS a little bit, but he was pointing out that when you use iOS and you get an iMessage from someone else using an iOS device, that the bubbles are blue. But if someone is using another operating system, quote unquote,
the messages are
this bright, bright green. And then he did this search on Twitter of people basically saying that, you know, that they hate green. And if somebody texts them back and it's green, that they judge them.
Oh,
they never date
please.
A guy that in green, which of course is ridiculous, right? But he was saying that he really feels like Apple sort of reinforces this kind of weird class war. There's this great line in the last paragraph. It would probably be one line of code to change the color, to reduce the tension between the blues and the greens, to make it possible for a broke dude stuck on Android 4.1 Jelly Bean to Mac on a rich girl with an iPhone 6 without her knowing that he's not in the same ecosystem.
That is a really interesting point. I mean, I don't think Apple's trying to diss the other phones. They just want you to know that this is an SMS message versus a web-based internet-based text message, right? So right. So the blue means that it came over the internet. It didn't come through your cell carrier's SMS system.
Right. And that's probably, that's true. You could argue that. I was kind of like, well, it's an SMS versus an iMessage, right. but it is really a pretty strong indicator. Oh, this person's an iOS or not. Right. You know.
Yeah.
When you get a green message, and it's interesting that it's green because Android is green. And I had no idea that people didn't like the green bubbles, that it was such a different.
Look at these tweets. People are so mean.
People are mean, right? Mean.
It's so awful, but I stopped trusting a person once I text them and it's green bubbles.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it's a little bit how I feel when I encounter someone with an AOL email address, right? Like,
yeah, that's a good point.
But, we all do it. We all have these brand associations and judge people a little bit by them, right?
Sarah tweets, I'll never seriously date a guy who texts with green bubbles. I'm sorry, but never. Elvin, which what kind of name is Elvin? Elvin Broquette says, when she texts you back, even though you got green bubbles, you smile like Leonardo
It's like
DiCaprio.
A disease. I got the green bubbles.
I got
disease.
Green bubbles. Do you respect me even though I'm on Android? Not really, now that I think about it. Wow. Wow.
A non-iPhone. So I had to share this piece.
Great piece.
Was so
thank you. It's funny.
Hysterical. Medium does, by the way, a very nice job of formatting this and making it pretty. Is that
yeah,
just,
they sure do.
Is that very easy to do? It's just like...
Very easy. You use Embedly, so you don't put any embed codes in. You just put the URL of the thing you want to embed in, and it puts it there.
And these are the Twitter cards. So it automatically knows Twitter cards, and
I think Medium and Twitter probably talk once in a while.
Because it's Ev Williams. I've heard he had something to do with Twitter.
There are a couple of people in common there.
By the way, Ed Dumble, we love. He is a deep data guy and an O'Reilly guy, and he's been on our shows. And so he's the one who actually discovered the green bubbles.
Oh, it was Ed.
Ed. Too legit to quit. I can't deal with you if you still have green bubbles.
What? Can't deal.
No.
Can't deal with you.
That's stupid. People will find any reason to be discriminatory. Green bubbles.
We're still living in the I'm a Mac, I'm a PC era, right? The hipster kid, and the business dude. Yep.
Although, okay, I'm just going to say.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Now that I'm using the iPhone, there's two things that are great. One is the Touch ID really works, and that's really nice to unlock stuff. And the other is messages, but it's totally wrong because it only works with people who have iOS and OS X devices. But it is a nice way to communicate. You can do audio. It's a nice system.
I mean, it's similar to Hangouts. I haven't used iMessage.
It's better than Hangouts.
I
wish Google would add some features. Well, for instance, let's say I'm going to send a message to Lisa. I could, of course, text an iMessage, and if I tap in the text field, I'll get the keyboard. And just like Hangouts, I can attach a file. But look at this. See the little microphone here? If I press it, I could start recording a message to Lisa and then swipe up, and it sends it. You can't do that on Hangouts.
Well, I could use Hangouts to type it for me without making you go to the trouble of listening to the darn thing.
No, but you see how fast that was? Look at that. And it's much easier.
Use dictation all the time.
No, this isn't dictation. I'm sending her the audio.
I prefer dictation because I would hate to have to listen to the darn audio.
So, Lisa, do you prefer dictation or do you love hearing these great messages from me? Like, mwah. And then I send it. See?
Oh,
see?
Newlywed.
You're disgusting.
Spare us the newlywed.
Oh, jeez. Says the old married people.
Okay, all right.
Public displays of affection. Jeez.
Disgusting. Disgusting. I do use Hangouts, which is a second-class citizen on the iPhone, but it's not a completely second-class citizen. I find that little audio thing really sweet.
Yeah,
also,
that's
without any additional feature, I can just do there's a messages on the desktop or the laptop or the iPad, and those all work together. But it's only when somebody's on a Mac, which is frustrating. I guess I could SMS somebody.
Oh, but then you get green bubbles.
I hate them green bubbles.
Those green bubbles.
Samsung green bubble is people. Going to make a new Galaxy smartphone, which I presume they'll announce next month at Mobile World Congress, with not one, not two, but three screens. This is a story from, again, Bloomberg Business Week. We'll see a lot about phones.
How three? You got the main one, the curved one. What's the third one?
There'll be a curve on the left.
Oh, both sides, right.
Both sides.
So, well, here's the problem. The reason I like the one curve, I never know easily which is upside down and right side up. When I pick up the phone,
oh, you know that, right.
But you really know that. It really, right. really does make sense. They ought to leave it on one side.
Samsung got a lot of attention doing the right thing, I think, which was putting a disclaimer in its user manual for the TV that the Samsung Smart TVs, some of them you can talk to. Mine you can talk to. It says in the disclaimer, if you enable voice recognition to interact with your smart TV using your voice, some interactive voice commands may be transmitted along with information about your device, including device identifiers, to a third-party service provider, Nuance Communications, that converts your voice commands to text and, to the extent necessary, provide the voice recognition features to you. Google does the same thing. When you say, okay, you know who, sorry, when you say, okay, you know who, Google will be listed. The phone's not always sending it to Google, but as soon as you say, okay, or as soon as you say, hey, Siri, or press the button, it sends that back to Apple or to Google. In this case, Samsung doesn't have a voice recognition department, so they sent it to Nuance, who, by the way, provides a lot of the recognition for Apple as well. Samsung will collect your interactive voice commands only when you make a specific search request to the smart TV by clicking the activation button on the remote or your screen or speaking into the microphone on the remote control. Now Samsung says, don't worry. That's not ominous. Calm down. They do not monitor living room conversations. And, of course, they don't.
But the wording in the eel before was
kind of implied that.
It was translated badly, I think. It implied that suddenly everything you say, because it said be careful.
That was the interesting thing, and I think that was actually Samsung trying to do the right thing,
right?
And warning people. And we talked about this with Steve Gibson yesterday on Security Now. I think that it's probably good to disclose what you're doing, and even to say, hey, if this bothers you, turn this feature off because, you know, if you say sensitive things, it could be sent up to our servers.
Well, and it probably is discoverable if in your divorce.
Maybe not. I don't know. But
no, I mean, so they want to limit their liability.
They're erring on the side of caution. Okay. Yeah. But as you and everybody else knows, if you have an Xbox One in your living room and you say, okay, Xbox, it then starts listening and sends the content back to Microsoft. If you say, okay, G-O-O-G-L-E, your phone will start listening or your browser will start listening and send the stuff back to Google. That's how these work. They don't constantly stream it because that would be prohibitive. I don't know. I feel like Samsung kind of got.
Well, okay, Leo, there's this security chic now. That everybody is supposed to put tape over the camera on their laptop
I know.
I think it's ridiculous, right? So is this the same kind of thing that everybody should, chop the ears off their TVs?
Well, it's very easy, and I think that's to Samsung's credit. They explained it, and then they said, and you can turn it off. Here's how you turn it off. And I actually have turned it off on my Samsung TV, not because I'm paranoid or worried about privacy, but just because it does not a useful feature for me. But I love the Amazon Echo. We played with that. Same thing. When you say the word Alexa, it sits up, takes notice, and then it will answer your question. And it does that by sending it back to Amazon. None of these devices can do it locally. They don't have enough brains. Certainly not your TV. However, this one I don't like. I don't know if this is true, but a number of owners of Samsung smart TVs, and I am one, and I haven't seen this, say that their TV sets have started to interrupt their movie viewing with a Pepsi ad.
What?
They're dynamically inserting ads on. If that's the case, I'm going to throw my $9,000 curved OLED TV out the window and cry.
I'll be standing out your window with arms wide open.
You bought the TV. There's no reason. And many TVs, the Panasonic Viera also has banner ads, some of which play movies on the interface. And you can disable some, but not all. But for it to insert an ad into a movie I'm watching
from your hard drive, these are like people watching a movie from Plex.
Samsung said,
I'm outraged.
We are aware of a situation that has caused some smart TV users in Australia to experience program interruption in the form of an advertisement. This seems to be caused by an error. And we are currently conducting a full and thorough investigation into the cause. It's only happening in Australia. We'd like to apologize. And I have to say, I don't use Plex, but I've never seen a Pepsi ad inserted into any of my content on my Samsung Smart TV. Might have to do with Foxtel. I don't know. There should not be ads on your TV anywhere.
No.
Because you bought it. But
yeah.
It's just a matter of time, I suppose. Let's see. Anything else? Good news. We talked yesterday about the ProPublica article. Werner Koch, who is a German who has since 1999 been the one, mostly the one guy who supports GPG tools. I use it. I love it. It is an open source version of PGP encryption for your email, and it could be used to sign other things and encrypt other things. And the article by Julia Angwin was just kind of broke my heart. He created GNU Privacy Guard actually in 97, and since then has been almost single-handedly keeping it alive with patches and updates from his home in Germany. I'm too idealistic, he says. In early 2013, I was about ready to give it all up and take a straight job, but then the Snowden news broke, and I realized this is not the time to cancel. Thank goodness. He's been making about $25,000 a year since 2001. Wow. He did launch a fundraiser in December, which has raised $43,000. Here's the good news. When this article came out, the Linux Foundation gave him a one-time grant of $60,000. Facebook and Stripe each pledged $50,000 a year to GPG Tools. And donations flooded his site, and he almost immediately reached his funding goal of $137,000.
Oh, that's great.
So he's now got $300,000 more to support his efforts. And he deserves it. By the way, apparently there's a launch. Yeah. This is the Deep Space Observatory, a SpaceX launch, which has been scrubbed twice. And it looks like they're going to be able to do it this time.
Kind of timely because Google just confirmed
almost $1 billion to SpaceX. Yeah.
Elon Musk is just coolest.
I'm getting all these people who are saying, I had no idea I was a blue bubble. Or green.
Or
there
green
you go.
Bubble.
They got to discover off.
When is it supposed to come back onto the barge?
When is it supposed to do that?
An hour. Says Jim Ruby.
That's the launch vehicle after it gets the whatever.
If he succeeds this time,
yeah. Cool. It's a deep space weather satellite, which I think, as I remember, is going to be in space four times the distance to the moon, three times it. At the Grange, it's at the Lagrange point. Ah, okay. Which is roughly three, it moves around, but it's roughly 750,000 miles out. So that's cool. The Deep Space Climate Observatory. Successful launch. Very nice. Congratulations, SpaceX. And yeah, Google, an investor in SpaceX. We just learned $900 million into SpaceX's billion-dollar round. So that's like pretty much 90%.
So basically the whole round.
My math is correct.
A few people were allowed to follow on is what that means.
Yeah. That's nice. Good for them. Google and Fidelity. And by the way, for their $1 billion, they get about 10% of the company. So I guess that values the company at $10 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So SpaceX did that launch, that launch vehicle. Not the Discover satellite. That's a government satellite. But the government pays SpaceX to put it into space. Successful launch. I don't know what they're going to announce, but Google and Mattel have a thing coming up. Sorry, got to turn my phone off. A lot of people. I'm getting all these blue
so
bubbles.
So many
all
blue
of a
bubbles.
Sudden. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's for a major international toy fair this Friday. Mattel invites you to view what's possible with an exclusive announcement and product debut. And then at the bottom, Mattel and Google. Do you think it's Google Cardboard?
It sounds cardboardy to me.
Doesn't Mattel make that 3D viewer, the Viewmaster?
The Viewmaster, yeah.
It'd be Viewmaster 2.0. Or it could be a tablet. There's lots of things it could be.
I don't know. They've got Viewmaster in the invite, so it's
This is. View what's possible, of course. Right. I didn't even look at that.
Maybe it's a tablet shaped as a Viewmaster film roll.
Wouldn't that be great? Cardboard, which was really the most interesting giveaway at the last Google I.O., it really hasn't been exploited well enough, I think. So
I think Google's kind of stepping up a little bit. LG just announced that buyers of the LG G3 now get for free LG's own version of the cardboard viewer, and it's made of plastic. So I don't know what you call it when cardboard's made of plastic. But, more and more we're seeing it. And we're seeing more app support for it as well.
I love it.
Seems like they could just make a simple app that you pull on the magnet and it, you know, it switches the viewer.
I mean, it kind of already is a Viewmaster, really.
That's the little magnetic thing that, and there's a little
that's
RF
how you click.
Or NFC in here that triggers the program to run. And this is the one Gina built in her lap as she was driving up from Google I.O. without even looking at the instructions. That's why it's really not quite.
It's not quite put together so well. I refused to look at the instructions. I was like, I will figure this out. I will unfold this thing.
I loved watching that. That was the greatest.
I wish I could have seen it.
But it got done.
I wish I could have
seen
it.
I was so impressed.
Yeah, of course.
It was determined Gina, the maker.
Determined Gina could have done that a lot more efficiently if I just read the instructions.
Determined
Macho Gina.
So the idea is you have to have an Android phone. You put the Android phone in here. And suddenly you get a new world view. It is the coolest thing they handed out at Google I.O. I know you guys got two Android Wear watches, but this is the coolest thing.
Yeah.
It's awesome when the coolest thing from Google I.O. only costs like $7 to buy on the internet.
Chair.
You know?
Yeah.
Everybody can get one now.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. And we've got a tool, a number, and yes, Gina's tip or thing or whatever coming up. We've missed you, Gina. Our show today brought to you by my razor. See how smooth, baby smooth my face is? That's because I know a guy named Harry. Harry's Razors. We've been talking about him a lot. I love it. If you go to HARRYS.com, you can take a look at the best deal in shaving out there. Shaving, who likes to shave? Nobody does, especially if you have a bad blade or a dull blade or heaven forfend, you're so cheap, you're using those disposable razors. Hey, actually, I don't blame you. When a Gillette blade in the drugstore could cost as much as $4, it's tempting to go get the 69 cents Bic. But I'll tell you what, it's bad enough you have to scrape your face with a super sharp blade every day. To do it with a badly made super sharp blade is ridiculous, and to spend $4 is ridiculous. Harry solves this by giving you the best razor blades I've ever used, better than anybody else's, for about half the price of those big brand names. Part of this is because Harry's was smart enough to buy the factory. When they first started the company, this is Silicon Valley, man, right there. When they first started the company, they did, all that research. What makes a great razor blade? Where do you get the best razor blades? They found out, really, it's only two factories in Germany that make these blades. They bought one of them, and they said, engineer these for sharpness, for performance. They're shipped for free right to your door, and because they make and ship the blades, they save so much money, they can pass the savings right on to you. You're basically getting razor blades factory direct, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Start with a Harry's kit. They've got the new Jimmy Chin limited edition razors that are so cool looking. They also have the Truman, the Winstons. I use Winston. They're nice metal handles with engraving and so forth. But the Truman set is a really amazing deal, $15. And for $15, you get, as you do with all the kits, the razor, with a handle that looks and feels great, three blades, the foaming shave gel, and they never mention this in the ads, but I always add it, my favorite part of the Harry's kit, that thing. you know what I'm talking about. It's the travel the holder doohickey. At first, I thought it was just like, oh, I threw this away. But then I realized, no, you put the razor in it, and then you can put it in your dop kit. You don't get cut. It dries out. It's really awesome. Harry's is the best. I love Harry's. This is a nice Truman set. There's the blade. You put it right in here when you travel, and never again will you get cut, but your blade will always be protected and never nicked, so it never nicks your face. $25 for the Winston set, but I'm going to sweeten this deal for you, because when you visit Harry's and use the offer code TWIG, your first purchase, $5 off. HARRYS.com or offer code TWIG. Now we're talking $10 for the Truman set. Now we're talking. Don't forget to try Harry's really nice aftershave, too. That's something new. And the aftershave moisturizer and the lip balm. Harry's, you need it this winter. Harry's, HARRYS.com. Use the offer code TWIG. And it'd be a great, I think it'd be a great Valentine's gift for the guy in your life. Harry's.com. Gina Trapani, wouldn't mind a little tip from you. We've missed all of those great tips. You've been collecting them, no doubt.
Oh, yes, indeed. In fact, I had the bad luck of having to Google stomach flu recently because, two-year-old daycare.
Yep.
And it turns out that Google is adding health-related information into the knowledge graph. So if you take your phone, for example, and search for tonsillitis or laryngitis or gastroenteritis or whatever, and it is the season to get sick, you'll get a card with a bunch of information about the condition, how contagious it is, whether it's self-treatable or self-diagnosable, what the age is affected. I mean, this is exactly what we were talking about earlier, that Google's trying to give you the answers right there. You know, they're an answer service, right? They're not a web search as much anymore.
That's great.
But yeah, really, really nice way to quickly, for those of us who like to self-diagnose by searching, by scaring the heck out of yourself by searching for symptoms and for illnesses, Google's there to help.
I've noticed my doctor tells me less now that he just assumes I'm going to Google it.
Yeah.
Do you notice that? Like, they don't have to give us all the education. They used to spend a lot of time, and I was very bored, where they would say, well, let me explain what this all means. Now they just say, hey, you can Google it. It's fine.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Yeah. I don't mind that. As long as you go to, somewhere reliable or use now Google's knowledge graph because they have actual physicians reviewing it and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is great, and I think it's important, and I think it's the right thing to do. However, you know it's going to be controversial.
Really?
WebMD stock went down.
Oh, because Google's competing with WebMD.
So the argument's going to be, Google's trying to do this because they're trying to get, they're trying to avoid us seeing irresponsible information. And I think it's the right thing to do. But it's Google entering farther into content.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's any ads associated with it. I don't know they're going to make any
kind
money
of the knowledge
on it.
Graph.
It's the right thing to do. It is. Yeah. I agree with all that. But mark my words. Somebody with a German accent is going to complain.
Google's blog post is about this. It says 1 in 20 Google searches is for health-related information.
Yeah, amazing.
So we're all looking for information about why we feel a certain way or our kids. That's amazing.
Jeff Jarvis, your number.
So just a minor little thing here. Where did I go with it? A Scottish researcher named Ronald McDonald. Insert laugh track here.
Ronald McDonald.
All the better. Says that, now I've lost the screen. You can predict elections based on Google searches.
You can predict elections based on
Google
not the first time we've heard this, right?
No, but I think it starts to get interesting to me. Plus, I didn't have any other numbers, so, standards this week, but I found it interesting that TV gets accused of having an impact on elections because we're not supposed to reveal the polls before they're closed. But basically, one way or the other, between 5:36 Ezra Klein and Google Search and all these tools now, we're going to get better and better and better, I think, at polling to an extent that says that you don't people. The question is, will people stop going to the vote?
Because Google already told them who's going to win?
Yeah, exactly. That's part of the argument.
It doesn't make sense because the only reason that information works is because people are Googling the candidate or the measure.
Right.
So if people stopped getting involved, then it would stop working. I don't know.
I didn't say it was my best number.
What was the number?
There's numbers.
There's no number.
There's numbers.
I got a number. You want a number? 998. Ask me what that number has to do with.
How much you're going to end up spending in thousands of dollars on your website?
No. Oh, God. No.
Ouch.
Ouch. No. We're going to get... Wait till you see the new website. And you tell me then if it was worth $250,000.
Oh, Leo.
How much does it cost... How much to see? It's my fault because we went to a really big, great firm that does sites for big companies, and of course, as soon as I told people this, everybody and their brother who watches the shows said, "Well, I could do it for you for $15.93 and stuff like that."
Yeah.
We're gonna wait. You tell me. I think you're gonna see every dollar on the screen. We'll see, but I can't wait. You'll see, because. The tricky thing that we're doing, and the thing that's kind of expensive, is we're doing an API.
Just good.
And then the website calls the API. It's just one of many consumers. I really feel like we need to get past the notion of a web page, especially for podcasts.
Well, there you go. Media. Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, we will have a beta test, and actually we're going to have it sooner than we thought. So stay tuned. We will be looking for beta testers. My number 998, though, doesn't apply to that. It applies to the number of Chrome experiments. So the newest we just played with, which is the IO 2015 experiment. But I realized, and we've probably talked about this before, but if you are using a WebGL-capable browser, preferably Chrome, that there is a place where you can go, chromeexperiments.com, where you can see all of the experiments collected into one place. It is a Google page, so these are all approved experiments. You don't have to worry about, the harm that these could cause. They actually do a nice job. They show you the website it's from. They show you a QR code that you could use. So if you're on a phone, you don't have to enter in any URLs. If you're on your browser, though, you can try these. Here's one. Pop the bubble, release the fish. This is called Traveling Fish. It's loading very slowly, but there's quite a few. That's probably because it's a featured. Ooh, WebGL Attractors Trip. Okay, everybody.
I'm glad this site is proving me wrong. I was saying that no one but Google makes these things.
998.
Look at the Helvetica clock too.
Ooh, this is fun though. I'm gonna go home and take some shrooms. Let me. What is it? The Helvetica
clock.
Helvetica
too.
Clock. All right. Whoa, dude! Helvetica clock two. All right.
I'm guessing the sequel is Comic Sans clock.
Yeah, wouldn't that be funny? Here you go, Helvetica clock 2. Oh, wow. That's pretty. So there's a 3D render of the digits, and each new time crashes into the previous time. That's hysterical. So that's showing WebGL because it's showing the physics engine as well as the 3D rendering engine. Because you have to predict how these things would fall in real physics.
It unfortunately doesn't look at all like the time because there are no colons and it's 24-hour clock.
Right.
But
yeah,
once you know it is.
Once you know it's 152 and 7. 152 and yeah. Yeah.
No, it's 320, right? 1520 is that?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, see?
What time is it? 1520? Okay, now I get it.
That is kind of
I could stare at that forever.
Yeah.
It is mesmerizing.
There's lots of these, quite a few of these. So if you were kind of intrigued by the Google I.O. thing, you ain't seen nothing yet. Here's some volumetric particle flow. Enjoy.
Oh boy.
I want to thank you for, you can change the particle count, the speed, the turbulence, the color. Wow. I don't know what this is good for, but Let's increase the number of particles. Ooh, how about 1,000,000 particles? I am animating 2,000,000 particles right now.
It looks like it might
be. And your browser is a stutter.
I don't want to, please.
Definitely in the millions right now.
But that's a lot of calculations.
Yeah, that really is.
Wow. That's pretty impressive, actually, that it could animate 2,000,000 particles like that. And the shadow. Wow.
Yeah.
This is actually a good way to test your computer. See where it, chokes.
Speedtest.com.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh.
Wow, this is a great speed. This is a good benchmark. And what's nice is the code for this is actually visible on the site, so you can see how he did it.
Yeah, turn the color wheel. Well, never mind.
It's a GitHub.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. You can get it.
Some people have too much time.
David Lee, you have too much time. JavaScript and WebGL. This is kind of cool. ChromeExperiments.com.
Ooh. NYC Taxis, A Day in the Life.
Oh, where's that? Let's see that.
Ooh.
Is that on the first page? No.
No, just look NYC. I think it says alphabetical or not.
It doesn't seem to be, but I can search. And yeah, it's a Google page. You can search. NYC Taxis by Chris Huang.
Oh, this is going to be good.
A Day in the Life. Begin. It visualizes what? These are, that's an empty taxi.
This is a taxi.
Whoa. Going to the airport, JFK. Yep. Going back. Wow.
Manhattan.
So this is a single taxi, and August 9th, 2013.
Wow.
And life in the big city.
Hey, that's neat. That's really neat. If only taxis were actually that fast.
I know. Look at that. Wow.
Down the West Side Highway.
Look at that. This is pretty cool, actually.
Wow, that's really
how many passengers? You could see the fares. $169 a fare, 66 passengers. And I can load another taxi. So I don't know where this data comes from. It's five minutes per second times sped up.
You could make
300x.
Do taxis broadcast their GPS data? It's interesting.
I don't know where he gets the data.
Yeah, no, there is, and I don't know what the...
Poor guy. He's stuck in hell at the airport at Newark.
Oh.
He's waiting. Oh. He's circling, waiting. No fare, waiting. Oh, he decided to go home? No. No, he's just floating around. Floating around the airport, looking. Oh, yeah, he decided to go home. He's had the hell with that. I'm not going to get a fare. Poor guy.
He's not rushing to get there.
No. You can't pick up... New York taxis can't pick up at Newark.
Well, what's he doing there?
I don't know. He must have dropped somebody
off.
He's
a gypsy cab. Now he's in the Holland Tunnel.
You know, up above, you can speed it up. I did speed it up.
It's now 9 minutes per second.
I got 17 minutes per second. It's really zapping.
Yeah, this guy's just, I think he's on a break.
A four-hour break.
This guy fell asleep. Oh, there he goes.
I'm awake.
That was dinner. Holy camoly. Holy cow.
Well, that's right. I'm supposed to be driving.
Anyway, this is a great video game. It's like Tron.
Isn't
anyway,
amazing?
These are fun, aren't they? WebGL. Maybe it isn't.
Yeah. My cabbie had 48 passengers, $713 total revenue. That's a hard day, man. $77.
Well, he doesn't get to keep it all, right? How much does he keep?
No. I don't know.
This guy had 126 passengers, $719. $72 in tips, so he gets to keep that and probably gets to keep a few hundred. That's not bad. You know, 250.
It's hard work.
Yeah, hard work.
It is tough work.
Mapbox and Heroku. And there's a blog post so you can see how it was done. That is really cool. Wow. There are some smart people in the world.
Boy, yeah.
And we're glad. And you know who one of them is? Gina Trapani. We love you, Gina. God.
Lassie, don't go.
You know, don't. This is hard enough on her. The poor woman really does want to be here. I know you do.
I love being here.
But you got a startup, and
you got a job.
You can't be spending time with us when you've actually got a job to do.
I do enjoy it very much. It's really cool to be back. Thanks for having me. I'll be back in a few weeks.
Please go to thinkup.com, sign up. If if 1,000 people sign up for ThinkUp, I think Gina would be back tomorrow. I swear to God. I mean, right? If you could, if enough people said, boy, that Gina Trapani, she's great. I should sign up for ThinkUp. If 1,000 people did every time you're on, I think we'd see more of her. So, folks, you know what to do. Sign up.
I've heard from Twit viewers that they've signed up for ThinkUp, that they're not big social media users, but they signed up and they subscribed because they wanted to support me.
That's right.
Which is just incredible and humbling to hear. So, and thank you so much for the Twit audience for being so supportive.
And you can try it free for 2 weeks, so there's no reason not to.
Yeah, yeah. We just released a really cool new developer tool. If you go to blog.thinkup.com, you can design your own insight. We've got this kind of WYSIWYG. You just load up a web page, and you pick your color, and you pick your image and your avatar, and you can write your own insight.
Really?
It's kind of a fun little.
Cool.
It's the insight creator. So if you
see
you
that's
click on that insight creator.
Okay. Can I be honest? That's the kind of thing Gina does when she's not here. Is she gets to do stuff like this? Right. That is really neat.
Right. So you can choose, hey, do I want to show a bar chart or a pie chart? Which network do I want
to
show?
Oh, you're doing Instagram. When are you going to do Instagram?
Yeah, we are working on Instagram right now, and we're hopefully to have it out. Hopefully we'll have it out in the next few weeks. So I'm really excited about that. It's in testing right now internally. And really, really excited about that. So if you design an insight using this kind of editor, you can write the headline in the body and show us an avatar. And then there's a button at the bottom that says file a ticket. It'll automatically create a new GitHub issue. You can save it and we'll see it, and you can kind of propose it for development. So a lot of fun. Yeah.
Neat. And ThinkUp is so great. I'll show you one more time. I'll show you my insights from ThinkUp, which are really really fun.
Thank you.
I can't wait to get my Instagram in here.
I'm really excited for Instagram. Super excited for Instagram. Yeah. And it'll make the stream so much nicer because it'll be photos. There'll be a lot more photos, a lot more visual. And Instagram really doesn't have a whole lot of analytics available to it, unlike Twitter and to some extent Facebook. So it'll be fun to add that to the product.
Yeah. Yeah. So
did you see Amazon giveaway?
No. What did they give away?
No, anybody can give away something. You can set a limit and say, if I get 1,000 new Twitter followers, the 1,000th person will get a book.
And you just Amazon.com/giveaway, run promotional giveaways to create buzz. Wow, that's so smart of them.
Isn't it?
So smart of them. You select a prize, you set up the giveaway, you get a link, you share the link on your, so you could say, for my 10,000th follower. And then for the entrant, win or lose, entry is fun and simple with immediate results. Amazon collects, of course, all of their personal information and then ships a prize directly to the winners. Wow, that's kind of cool. I'm going to have to do something like that.
Jeremy Kaplan found that.
I'm going to have to do something like that.
Wow. That's perfect for Twit.
Yeah. Yeah, it hardly costs you anything.
Yeah.
I'll give away Gutenberg the Geek. It'll only cost me $1.
That's right. Now, what I want to know is if we get enough new followers, we get Gina back.
How can we get Gina? We got a really strong arm. That's mean. It's mean. She has a job to do. And Neil Dash is going to kill you, Jeff Jarvis. Stop trying to poach
Leo and I are just puppies looking for love.
No.
Oh, we're not looking for love. We're looking for Gina.
You guys have been doing pretty well without me. You've had some awesome, awesome guests. Matthew and Matt, and you're going to be good. And I'm going to be back. I'm going to be back in a few weeks. It's going to be good. And it's been great to be here today. But I do miss you guys. And I'm thrilled that you're still having me on a regular, even though I abandoned you.
You didn't abandon us. I want to make that very clear. We understand, and we love you. And to get you once a month is great. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Jarvis from his professorial lair, his ivory tower high above Times Square at the CUNY City University of New York Journalism School. Great to have you.
Wonderful to be here.
Always a pleasure. We do this show every Wednesday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2100 UTC. You can be in the studio audience for any of our shows, but we do ask that you email tickets@twit.tv just so we know. There are some studios like my office that don't have a lot of room, but even if you don't email us, just show up. And if we can accommodate you, we will. We just can't guarantee you a seat unless you email tickets@twit.tv. You can also watch live on our stream at twit.tv. You can also get on-demand versions of every show after the fact, both audio and video available at twit.tv/twig. wherever finer podcasts are aggregated and distributed via the interwebs. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.